Kulik, the host of the Ex Millennial Man podcast, the podcast for SeedSing.com. Ty and I are still taking a little bit of a break from doing regular new Ex Millennial Man shows, but I am using this time to bring you content from other shows that I produce or have created, just to give you an idea of what's going on in our little Ex Millennial Man universe. And what I'm bringing you today is the newest show, the latest one that I've put together called The Vaporware Tales. If you don't know what vaporware is, it's a term for technology, software, music, movies that we've been promised. Sometimes we've had them in development or we've had prototypes, but they've never come to market or they've never come to us. One of the most famous examples in my lifetime of vaporware is the Nintendo PlayStation. And that is what I do the first episode on Nintendo and Sony teaming up to create a disc-based system called the PlayStation. I bring in some archival clips, do a lot of research on this to try to figure out what happened and should it even happen to begin with. As a matter of fact, the last episode I did is on the flying car, kind of the history of the flying car and why we have no flying cars. But the episode I'm bringing you guys today is on, it's a script. It's the script for Star Wars Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. This was a movie that was when Disney purchased Lucasfilm and they announced the three directors that they had for their new Star Wars sequel trilogy. The original director of Episode 9 is Colin Trevorrow, who was fresh off of directing Jurassic World. So it was a big deal. And something happened. Obviously, we didn't get to see Star Wars Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. We saw The Rise of Skywalker, and I, for one, don't think we're better for that. So I wanted to tell this story and go through this script and, again, bring in some ideas that other people brought in. Please enjoy. Also, please go follow, subscribe to The Vaporware Tales. You will find it everywhere you found this podcast. Also, last week, I did the podcast on First Watch Rewatch, which we are currently in season. A couple days after this episode drops over on First Watch Rewatch, Tina and I will be talking about Shock Treatment, the sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show, which obviously didn't do very well because nobody remembered it. But today I'm going to present to you guys the Vaporware Tales. You're going to tell, this is my second episode of doing it, that I still hadn't gotten all my timings right with the music, but stick through it. Trust me, this story of this script and what we almost got is truly incredible. And I thank you guys for sticking with us, following through. Life comes at you. Ty and I, we're going to be back in a few weeks here. But in the meantime, please, once again, enjoy me telling you all about what could have been the good Star Wars Episode 9. Talk to you guys next week. What we are listening to is a piece of music called Duel of the Fates. It's by John Williams. It's from Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Came out in 1999. This was such a big deal. I'm going to talk a little bit about it in this podcast here. That when this new piece of music came out, immediately they made a music video. It was on Total Request Live. It actually, I think it's the only time the London Symphony Orchestra had something on TRL. This is probably the third most popular piece of Star Wars music behind the opening fanfare and the Imperial March. It was a big deal. Very, very big deal. The music plays in Episode 1 during the lightsaber fight between Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Darth Maul in the bowels of the palace at Naboo. Probably the best part of that movie, that or the pod race, and a movie that didn't get very well received. The music plays again with when Yoda and Darth Sidious are fighting in Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. It's been used again and again and again. A very iconic piece of music. Back when Disney announced that they bought the Star Wars franchise from Lucasfilm, they decided to announce a sequel trilogy. And in that immediately, J.J. Abrams, fresh off of giving some life to the Star Trek movie series, was going to come in. He was going to direct the first movie. Then there was going to be Rian Johnson, who had come from TV. He did some stuff with Breaking Bad, but it also had a couple of movies that had done well. He came on board for episode 8. And for episode 9, they announced a gentleman by the name of Colin Trevorrow. Now, as I go through this story, and talk about what Colin Trevorrow wanted to do with Star Wars, we're going to learn why this is part of the Vaporware project, because Colin Trevorrow's Star Wars Episode 9, Duel of the Fates, is the movie we never got to see. I welcome you all to the Vaporware Tales. Hello all, welcome to the Vaporware Tales. I am your host, R.D. Kulik, podcaster, big-time Star Wars fan, and somebody who wants to tell you the story of the Episode 9 we almost got and passed judgment on it. The problem is, we're not going to know what this Episode 9 looked like because we never got to see it. Got to see it in some ways, and I'll explain that as the podcast goes along. But yes, Star Wars Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. The final film of the Star Wars Skywalker saga, the movie that was supposed to close everything together. Now, before I get to it, I need to go through a little bit of a history here. Star Wars, the original film, came out in 1977. It did not have the Episode 4 on it. It did not have the whole New Hope or anything like that. It was just called Star Wars. George Lucas, who wrote and directed it, he created the story, everything, put this movie out May 25th, 1977, and it was a massive hit. It won a bunch of Oscars. It was up for Best Picture. And immediately, 20th Century Fox at the time is like, okay, we need more Star Wars movies. In 1980, The Empire Strikes Back, which this is when you saw Episode 5. I believe they re-released Star Wars a year earlier and said Episode 4 on it. The Empire Strikes Back is on a very, very short list of greatest sequels to a movie ever. And then the whole Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia story was wrapped up in May 25th, 1983 with Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. That was it for Star Wars movies. You had some TV movies, some Ewok movies here and there. There would be action figures would continue to come out. There would be all, I mean, Star Wars was still in the public consciousness. Then you famously had the Thrawn trilogy, a group of books written by Timothy Zahn, and it was still in people's mind, especially somebody like me who's born in 1975. So I grew up with Star Wars. And then it was announced, or first before that, we had the re-releases of the original trilogy where the effects were cleaned up a little bit. There's some extra scenes added. The scene with Boba Fett in the original Star Wars movie kind of split some people. They were not very happy with a lot of it. We liked the cleaned up effects, but for the most part, it's like, this is not my Star Wars. Due to the success of that, George Lucas did announce that he was going to make a prequel trilogy, the story of how Anakin Skywalker fell. 1999, May 19th, my birthday, as a matter of fact, Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace came out. Now, when I was talking about the John Williams song Duel of the Fates, I'd said it was a big deal. About a month before Episode 1 came out, and there's a lot of secrecy surrounding this movie. There was a trailer out, but a lot that we did not know. But they did release a soundtrack to the movie about a month early. And a song, I believe it's right after Duel of the Fates, is called Qui-Gon's Funeral. So anybody that got that thing knew that a character named Qui-Gon was going to die. And then when you sat down and you saw Liam Neeson's character was named Qui-Gon Jinn, you put it together. So kind of a little bit of a spoiler there, but it didn't affect me. I don't remember it. Episode 1 did well. A lot of the people like me, were not as thrilled with it, but it did very well in the theater. It made a lot of money. Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, which I think is the second worst of the movies we'll talk about, came out in 2002. Again, fans kind of divided, but it was successful. And then May 19th, my birthday, 2005, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith came out to close the book. And this is the movie where Anakin falls, becomes Darth Vader, and you have the famous battle at the end between Obi-Wan and Anakin. That was it. Lucas had said, that's it for Star Wars. No more big time movies. We're going to explore other avenues here. He did come out with the Clone Wars movie, the animated Clone Wars movie, which, again, a lot of people don't like, but it did give birth to the Clone Wars TV show. There's the Jendi Tartakovsky Clone Wars shorts, which are incredible. They're not considered canon. It's more the George Lucas Clone Wars cartoon that's considered canon. But there was still a thirst for Star Wars. And even though Revenge of the Sith was done, the Clone Wars was continuing on. It went from Cartoon Network, I believe, to Netflix. And then October 30th, 2012, Disney shareholders were treated with this message from then and now CEO Bob Iger.
Today, I am proud to announce the Walt Disney Company is acquiring Lucasfilm, the global entertainment company founded by George Lucas and the home of the legendary Star Wars franchise. In addition to getting the rights to one of the greatest family franchises and epic stories of all time, Disney is also acquiring all of Lucasfilm's operating businesses, including Industrial Light and Magic and Skywalker Sound. George Lucas is a true visionary and an innovative epic storyteller who has defined modern filmmaking with unforgettable characters and amazing stories. The Star Wars universe now has more than 17,000 characters inhabiting several thousand planets and spanning 20,000 years. And this gives Disney infinite inspiration and opportunities to continue the epic Star Wars saga. Fans can expect a new feature film, Star Wars Episode 7, in theaters worldwide in 2015. And there will be more feature films, as well as consumer products, television projects, games, and theme park attractions.
And that was it. Star Wars had new life. And this Disney, this is the Disney in the midst of the MCU. This is the Disney where they have nonstop hits with Pixar. Kathleen Kennedy, who'd basically been running Lucasfilm for George Lucas, came over to run Lucasfilm for Disney. They, again, immediately announced that new Star Wars movie, Episode 7. It was supposed to be May of 2015, but it got moved back to December. J.J. Abrams, who, to say he reignited the Star Trek franchise, he did. The truth is he did. But a lot of Star Trek people really did not like those movies. They thought the performances were great. I mean, who doesn't love Chris Pine? But they felt like he had betrayed Star Trek. And as a matter of fact, his Star Trek, his first one, a lot of people said is the best Star Wars movie made since Empire Strikes Back. They felt like had a very Star Wars feel. Having J.J. Abrams in Star Wars was kind of a big deal because they felt like, OK, he can do something with this. And the trailer, the teaser trailer for Force Awakens is perfect. I mean, absolutely perfect. You're introduced very briefly to the new characters. You see Finn, you see Rey, you see Poe, you see Kylo Ren. And then you also see Han Solo, Chewbacca, the Millennium Falcon, Princess Leia. You don't see Luke Skywalker, but we'll get to that. And so people were excited. And as a matter of fact, the very first line of The Force Awakens is Max von Sydow saying to Oscar Isaac, this should make things right. And a lot of people felt like this is okay. This movie is going to be, this is going to, everybody's going to forget about how much we dislike the prequels. And funny thing happened. The movie was enjoyable. The movie was good. The new characters were great. The dynamic between Finn and Poe and Finn and Rey is really good. All the actors, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, they're all good. Everybody's really good. The problem that some people, including me, has, it felt like a rehash. It felt like, okay, we're just telling you Star Wars again, which they kind of were. Device that could kill a planet. They had to run in and shoot the thing to blow that up. But it's somebody's going to have to sacrifice themselves. I should have said this from the top. A lot of spoilers here for the Star Wars sequel trilogy, but Han Solo dies, and scene with Chewbacca coming up in the Millennium Falcon without Han Solo is one of the most heartbreaking things ever. And the movie ends with Rey finding Luke. The last shot you get is her handing over the lightsaber to Luke. The Force Awakens was a huge hit. I think it's still like I don't know if it's the highest grossing movie in like U.S. history. It's something just absolutely ridiculous. And the critics loved it too. If you look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores of a lot of these movies, The Force Awakens is only behind The Empire Strikes Back and tied with the original Star Wars at 93%. People loved it. They loved it. If anybody had complaints, it was that it was a little derivative. So the movie's now being handed over, or the franchise is being handed over to Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi. Like I said, Rian Johnson, I think, wrote and directed the episode of Breaking Bad. Ozymandias, those of you that know, he had done a couple of movies. He'd done Brick. He had done Looper, movies that people liked. They were like, OK, this guy is going to be an up and coming. He's going to be a big time director. So he comes in to do The Last Jedi. I don't have any clips for this. All right. To say The Last Jedi was divisive is definitively an understatement. a lot of the right-wing people, mainly people like Ben Shapiro, felt like this movie had destroyed Star Wars. The movie starts out with Luke throwing the lightsaber away. People were mad about that. And they were like, Luke is bitter and angry, and Rey is, she's so powerful, nobody knows why. And Kylo Ren is, he's too petulant as a child, and they killed Captain Phasma, and Rose Tico, we don't like her as a character. Now, most of that is sexism and some racism involved. And I'm going to tell you right now, The Last Jedi, I think, is long. I think it's overly long. But I think the ideas, it starts to present its own ideas in this movie. And when Kylo Ren tells Rey, you're nobody, you're not anybody important, I'm a Skywalker, that's why I'm here, but you're nobody. And then you see the slave kid from Canto Bight at the very end of the movie. I get goosebumps every time I think about this scene, with him looking up and seeing that star shooting in the sky that's supposed to be the Millennium Falcon going to light speed. He picks up the broom with the Force and like holds it up like he's holding a lightsaber. It was like, this is an evolution. Okay. Star Wars is growing up. It's moving on. And while this is going on, the Clone Wars cartoon is very grown up. You are dealing with things in this movie. I mean, seeing the true torment of Anakin falling, the failure of the Jedi, and then the character of Ahsoka Tano, seeing that failure in the Jedi and being a genuinely good person, but not thinking she can be with the Jedi, she can do anything with them. It's just a corrupt institution. So while the critics loved it, it still made a lot of money, not as much as The Force Awakens, mind you. This is also The Last Jedi's coming after Rogue One, which a lot of people genuinely liked. Even the fans that hated The Last Jedi, they kind of genuinely liked it. But whereas The Force Awakens made over $2 billion, The Last Jedi made just over $1 billion, which, again, that's billion with a B. That's a lot of money. So some of the people at Disney were a little nervous. Now, back to Colin Trevorrow. So Colin Trevorrow, and gosh, I hope I'm saying his name right. I've heard it a few different ways, but I was trying to. He had kind of gotten big. He made this movie, Safety Not Guaranteed. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. And then he wrote and directed Jurassic World, which, regardless of what you think of that movie, that was a big movie. Steven Spielberg handpicked Colin Trevorrow to do this movie. It injected life back into that franchise like it never had been before. Truth be told, I think that movie is ridiculous, but I think it's really fun. I think it's really good. So he was on a hot streak. And so with J.J. Abrams and now Rian Johnson kind of successfully launching these movies, things looked good. Well, then one day it was announced that Colin Trevorrow was leaving his Star Wars Episode 9. There's no date yet or anything. It just was flat out announced. Oh, he's leaving. And everybody's like, what happened here? And there's a lot of rumors that maybe he was difficult to work with or script problems and everything like that. But just, I think it was just 2 days after he announced that he was leaving, the website CNET came out with this report.
Star Wars Episode 9 has a new director. Well, that didn't take long. On September 5th, Lucasfilm announced Colin Trevorrow would not be directing Star Wars Episode 9. Trevorrow is probably best known as the director of Jurassic World. 1 week later, and J.J. Abrams is officially on board to write and direct Star Wars Episode 9. In a short post on StarWars.com, the announcement says Abrams will co-write the film with Chris Terrio, who wrote the screenplay for Argo and was one of the writers of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
So they're going back to the well. They're bringing back J.J. Abrams. I know I didn't. Trevorrow, that's what he said. Outside of Safety Not Guaranteed and Jurassic World, I mean, I didn't know much. I thought, okay, this is what they're doing. They seem to be, Gareth Edwards did Rogue One. It was around the same time, too, the Han Solo movie, Solo, was going on. And Chris Miller and Phil Lord were directing it, and they were let go. And Ron Howard came in just a few days later. So there was talk that Kathleen Kennedy and some people at Lucasfilm and Disney wanted these directors to kind of follow what they're doing. And to be fair, Kevin Feige did this with the Marvel movies. A lot of people talked about that, how strict the rules were, and you had to abide by what the producer said, not your kind of own vision, and you're bringing in these quote unquote auteurs to do it. So nothing was heard, but it was kind of buried, left away. He went on to, I think, write and produce the second Jurassic World movie and then direct the third one.
Also, right before he was let go from Star Wars Episode 9, he had directed a movie called Book of Henry, which did terrible in the theaters and critics hated. So maybe he wasn't on such a hot streak anymore. And J.J. Abrams rebuilt the franchise and let him stick the landing. Problem is, a lot of what J.J. Abrams built in The Force Awakens was gone after The Last Jedi. Snoke was dead. The rebellion's almost crushed into nothingness. Luke is dead. Where is he going to go from here? Is the question. And we were given a trailer where you saw Rey jump in, do a backflip in the air while she cuts Kylo Ren's his specialized TIE fighter with a lightsaber. And at the end of the trailer, you hear the cackling laugh of Emperor Sheev Palpatine. If you guys didn't know Sheev was his first name, you're welcome. So here, Palpatine's the bad guy, which I remember when the episode one started, I was jazzed, I was geeked, I was ready to go. And then the opening crawl happens and it says the trade dispute in the galaxy and da da da. And I'm like, huh, that doesn't seem exciting, but okay, let's see where this goes. When the crawl starts for The Rise of Skywalker, episode 9, it's kind of like Palpatine's alive. And I mean, look, there's never been a more uninspired but perfect line reading than when Oscar Isaac's Poe has to tell the assembled rebels in episode 9.
Somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah, he seems like Now, just for people to know, if you forgot, Darth Vader, redeemed, picks up Palpatine while he's shooting lightning everywhere, and now the lightning's getting all over him, throws him down never-ending shaft on the Death Star 2, and then you see this weird blue explosion, blue flames and stuff, and then moments later, the entire Death Star was exploded. So, they don't explain how he comes back. They're like, ooh, Sith magic, and cloning and da-da-da, all this other stuff where, look, it was the Jedi's that brought in the clone troopers, okay? But anyways, it just didn't make any sense. I remember after I watched The Rise of Skywalker, which again, I like The Force Awakens and I really like The Last Jedi, I kind of had the same feeling. Famous YouTuber Jenny Nicholson, she does a lot of big deep dives on Star Wars, but a lot of other stuff. She's really famous for just recently, a few months ago, she did that 4-hour just breakdown of the Star Wars hotel experience. It is great. I know I just said 4 hours YouTube and you're like, what? It is a great video. In her review of episode 9, Rise of Skywalker, she kind of summed up how I think a lot of us felt.
I saw the Rise of Skywalker and I didn't like it very much.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. And there's, look, I can give you all the reasons that I personally didn't like it, but there's a lot of the reasons everybody didn't like it is it took everything that The Last Jedi did well and unraveled it. Rey now is the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine. She is somebody. Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, gets redeemed in some of the dumbest ways possible. And they have their big space battle where every Star Destroyer has a planet-killing weapon on it, yet somehow the Jedi still win, and Ben Solo and Rey are a part of a Force dyad, and John Boyega might as well not even be in this movie. Sure as hell, Kelly Marie Tran, who played Rose Tico, really had no place in this. I mean, Carrie Fisher had a bigger role than the two of them, and she was deceased by the time this movie was like in production. The movie just stupidly, in the whole Ben kissing Rey before he dies, it's like just dumb. And I know people are going to say, look, I hear my co-host on the Ex-Millennial Man's always like, eh, it's Star Wars. They give you free stuff. What do you have to be mad about? But I did a podcast on the Ex-Millennial Man about Siskel and Ebert. And I played a review that they did for a movie that was terrible. Roger Ebert said, this is a crime. People come pay money. They take time. They sit there to watch your movie. And if you don't give them something, if you give us something that's insulting, you are committing a crime. You're taking part of that person's life. And I believe that. And I believe that's important. And I think a lot of people, I mean, if you go look at the Rotten Tomatoes score, The Rise of Skywalker is 51%. That's the lowest of any of the 9 mainline Star Wars movies. It's the only one that did not get an A from CinemaScore. I mean, The Phantom Menace was at 52%. People did not like this movie. Now, famously, right-wing nutjobs like Ben Shapiro loved this movie. He thought it was great. It made sense. It did everything right. But it is widely regarded as a big, big mess. So a few weeks after Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker comes out, there's a script leaked. Somebody leaked the script out, and it actually started, I'm going to play some of his comments later, but with filmmaker and producer Robert Meyer Burnett, did a YouTube show, a YouTube blog about this script, the Trevorrow script called Duel of the Fates. Now, the script is credited on there. It's written by Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly. Derek Connolly is the writing partner of Trevorrow. He's been the most time these movies. It's usually two or more people that are writing them. You can actually go read this script. It's over on the Internet Archive. It's 128 pages. It says it was the date was the 16th of December, 2016. Just a few weeks before Carrie Fisher passes away. And that's going to matter a lot because this script, and I'm going to go through some of the highlights part of the script, go through its story. She features heavily. But this is perfect when it comes to vaporware because we have the script. There was even some production art that was leaked out of it. There was meat behind this. And I want to stress as I go through the story that this is probably a first draft. It's the only official script. It's the only one that I could find that you could go out there and actually read. So there are some things. There are problems with this script. I definitely think there are problems with this script that might have been fixed later on. I'm going to tell you the first problem I have with it. It seems like it should be more movies. It seems a lot like Revenge of the Sith, where they did all of Anakin's downfall in one movie. It seems like they're trying to tell a much bigger story, but they have a certain time limit. So bigger parts of the story get kind of condensed. But I'm going to start with a crawl here. Star Wars, Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. The iron grip of the First Order has spread to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. Only a few scattered planets remain unoccupied. Traitorous acts are punishable by death. Determined to suffocate a growing unrest, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren has silenced all communications between neighboring systems. Led by General Leia Organa, the Resistance has planned a secret mission to prevent their annihilation and forge a path to freedom. So you get the stars and it pans down. And you're looking at this big planet that has this huge, like, metal ring around it. It's man-made metal ring. And there's just tons of Star Destroyers of varying sizes off of this ring. So it's almost like it's a shipyard, which is what it is. There's a huge spire that goes into the planet. And this is where they, like, mine out ore and stuff to build Star Destroyers. You see stormtroopers and stuff going around, and you see a bad guy BB unit, like you had BB-8 in The Last Jedi, and there's a bad guy one. And the bad guy BB unit, like, hits a wall, and you see some paint scratches away, and underneath, hey, it's BB-8. And then Rose Tico's like, hey, are you there? And they're doing this whole kind of covert mission. And you see these people that are on the planet, they're like migrant workers. You see, like, a ship comes in, there's all these different aliens amongst the crew. Is Finn and Poe. And they're like, oh, is the plan going to go well? Yeah, the plan's going to be awesome. And they meet with Rose and she's like, you told me 4 days, I've been here for 4 weeks. And she shows them their plan. They're going to put some, like, mines or bombs or grenades or something into that spire that goes into the planet. And they're going to blow it up and it's going to make all these Star Destroyers not working or whatever. And, you know, it's Star Wars stuff. It's like, okay, we've got a plan. We're going to do this. So they get ready to do it. They open things up, all this other stuff. And then suddenly nothing happens. And you pan up to the orbital ring. You see some First Order, like, general admiral or something, like, ha, their plans. We always know what they do. They've been fighting this war too long that nobody knows how to save them. And so tell the stormtroopers to go get them. And then all of a sudden you see this hooded figure pop out with a staff. It's Rey's staff. And hits a button and blue lightsaber blades shoot out of each end, a la Darth Maul's lightsaber. Now, remember in The Last Jedi, she and Kylo Ren were trying to pull Luke Skywalker to them, or the old Anakin Skywalker lightsaber, and it shattered. It broke. At the end of the movie, she's holding it broken. I don't know if this is on purpose, but I really like the concept that she is dealing with a broken lightsaber in the same way that Kylo Ren says. The whole reason he has that cross guard is because it's supposed to vent out of the side because the kyber crystal's broken. I do like this idea a lot, but I also like Return of the Jedi. Rey's coming in with her own built lightsaber. She lost her last one. And it's cool. It's got the staff she's known for, and it's a whole double bladed, and she does all her crazy Jedi stuff and throws it like a boomerang, cuts down all these stormtroopers and all these migrant workers. They're like whispering. They're like, Jedi, Jedi, Jedi. Because they said early on, the war's been going on for a little while now, and their exploits are becoming legend, much in the way that Luke and them were legends. So strong opening. I think this is a really good opening. During the fight, there's a time where Finn hits a stormtrooper and part of his helmet breaks. And Finn looks into this guy's eyes and recognizes him from when Finn was a stormtrooper. So we're kind of coming back to that story, which is good. Our intrepid heroes, they're not ready. Their plan broke down. Also, Rey is wearing kind of a black outfit now, too, a la Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi, Anakin Skywalker in Revenge of the Sith. But they find this big Star Destroyer. They call it an Eclipse class, or the Damaged Eclipse or something like that. And you have like, they're like, can we fly this thing? Poe's like, I can fly anything. And is there a crew on there? Oh, no, they're on holiday. So there's just a bridge crew. So Rey goes in and Jedi mind tricks the entire bridge crew, which I'm not crazy about that, but fine, whatever. And they steal this giant Star Destroyer. So awesome. They go away. And the next thing you know, you see this like this dark ship. It's called the Knife Nine, comes in. Who's on that ship? But the Knights of Ren, the fabled Knights of Ren that we've heard about. And you see the general, the First Order general's like, we put a probe on the ship. They're in range. And the Knights of Ren are like, you failed. And one of them fires up and he's got the Darksaber, the famous Darksaber in The Mandalorian now. And he cuts the general down. And it's like, oh, man, these Knights of Ren, they are not messing around. So here's where the movie moves to its big kind of set piece. Coruscant. Former capital planet, which I was all in. And they even say, as the ship approaches Coruscant, you see the old Art Deco buildings from the New Republic, but they've been built on top of. And it's colder. It's much more totalitarian. So you see the old, but the buildings are just bigger. And in the middle is this giant, almost palace-like looking, almost ship. It's like moored into the ground. But this giant thing, it's the First Order headquarters. In there, you see the people of Coruscant, because it's a city planet, are all hanging around, and you see a hologram of General Hux, except now he's called Chancellor Hux. And he's doing this like, you know, people will be punished. And you see an alien that was helping our heroes at the beginning of the movie, and he's underneath like this lightsaber guillotine. And you see this little boy watching, and somebody tries to cover his eyes, but he moves, and you see the blade come down, obviously off screen, and the Chancellor Hux, as they say, he's got a little gray in his hair, and he has to meet with like a group of warlords and tell them, you know, the galaxy's safe, everything's fine, the resistance is gone, nobody can talk. And they're all like, but we hear about this Jedi out there. And he's like, don't worry, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren's on it. And then that cuts to Kylo Ren, who is on Mustafar, the planet where Vader has his castle, or had his castle, where he and Obi-Wan fought in Revenge of the Sith. And what's really cool about this is while he's approaching Vader's castle, Luke's Force Ghost is like harassing him. He's like behind him and he's like saying, this is where your path leads you, to an empty tomb. And he's like, you're a ghost. What can you tell me? And he's like, I know what you're looking for and you're not going to find it. You're just going to be hollow. And he's like, I'm going to be more powerful than any Jedi. Even you. And Luke's like, are you sure? And he gets really mad. Well, he goes into Mustafar and he finds a Sith holocron. He opens it up. And if you guys know, like the way they open up, it kind of detaches and opens, and it's Emperor Palpatine.
Somehow Palpatine returned.
Did not return. This is him recording a last will and testament where he's basically telling Vader, hey, if things go south and Luke Skywalker kills me, I need you to take him to the guy who trained my master, who trained Darth Plagueis, guy by the name of Tor Valum. He's going to be in the so-and-so system. And while the hologram of Palpatine's talking, it scans Kylo Ren and it realizes, wait a second, you're not Darth Vader. And it shoots all this red lightning and like scars his face in a very similar way that Palpatine's face was scarred in The Revenge of the Sith. Now, as he screams out in pain, it cuts to Princess Leia. And they describe her in this as obviously older wearing kind of a white gown. You can see that she feels this pain. She feels the pain of her son. She's tired, but she's still resolute. And the next thing you know, she sees a giant Star Destroyer coming down to her planet. A little bit I did like about this scene is when they bring they have them handcuffed by now, but they bring the First Order people out and they're like, yo, we're going to kill you. We're going to do this. And Poe's like, what should we do with them? And Leia says, feed them. They look like they're hungry, which I think is nice. It's a really nice Princess Leia thing. And her and Poe have a really nice scene about how just detached Rey is and how she's always frustrated. And she's like, I'm not strong enough. I keep having visions of Kylo Ren. I can't shut him out. And Finn's like, it's too late for him. He can't change. And Rey's like, it's never too late to change. You taught me that. That is a well-written scene. That is really good. And it's one of many scenes that are like that. Now, at the same time, Chewbacca finds out this huge Star Destroyer they carried has a whole bunch of First Order gear on it, like walkers and weapons and stuff. And they're like, great, we have all this equipment. Now we need an army. But they're like, but how are we going to get an army? We can't communicate. And Rey's like, wait, and finds those old Jedi books that she took when she was working with Luke. And she said, underneath the Jedi Temple in Coruscant, there's an old Republic era beacon that like shoots out and communicates with all these things. And they have a little thing like, well, how's it going to work? Because the First Order's jammed it. And again, I think it's a good writing. Poe's like, oh, that old Republic stuff is way better than the junk we use today. I guarantee it'll work. And they're like, oh, wow, that's cool. Okay, we're going to do that. You also have a scene of Rey training and she has a vision, much like Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, of Kylo Ren Ben Solo after being all disfigured is going to a First Order hospital and they're melding. They say in this, they're smelting Mandalorian armor into his skin. So he's got these like metal streaks throughout his face and they put a helmet on him, seal it on, and they say it's got a deep guttural breathing. Darker than Darth Vader's. So he is just flat out changed. And Rey feels this. But then she sees this Jedi temple and she's having these visions and she's trying to figure out how to work with them. And Luke's Force Ghost comes. He's like, that place you saw is called Mortis. Now, a lot of you probably don't know this, but Mortis is a planet that was in the Clone Wars show. There was a series of episodes about Anakin going to Mortis, and it's supposed to be basically where the Force is, like where it's founded, where its main power source is. And there's like a father, a son, and a daughter. And the daughter was the light and the son was the darkness. And this is the whole thing where the Force is. So Mortis is like the most ancient of ancient places. Luke's like, you gotta go. And there's a little bit of stuff in the movie where you see Hux trying to like use the Force, but it's never working. He also has like an old vintage lightsaber that he keeps in his chambers. So you can tell he's kind of all like, oh, I want to be part of the Force. But he and Kylo Ren meet up and Kylo Ren's still in charge. And he like even tells him, I don't need titles, Chancellor. You're getting everybody where they're supposed to be. And he's like, I got to go find this new teacher. I'm going to leave. And so now the team is all around, again, like Jedi, they're all around this base that they're going to decide, okay, who's going to go where? How are we going to do this? So you're going to have Finn and Rose. And C-3PO and R2-D2 are going to go to Coruscant and they're going to set off the Jedi holocron. And Rey and Poe are going to go find this person that Poe knows that can like find places in the galaxy. And she's going to show him where, and Chewbacca's going with them too, sorry. And she's going to show Rey where Mortis is. So they get their plan together. Now, here's something. There seems to be a little bit of a thing with Poe and Rey, like Han Solo and Princess Leia. Like Poe wants to get something on and Rey's like, no, I can't do that. And the script even like Leia recognizes the romantic tension. And there's even a time where Rey's like, I can't do this. The Jedi attachments aren't allowed. And Leia's like, why are you listening to something a man said 1,000 years ago? And she's like, obviously it hasn't worked out for the Jedi. Maybe part of your passion is what you need. But Rey's like, no, I got to be a good Jedi. Then you have Kylo Ren, his new helmet and everything, looking at his melted Darth Vader mask. And he's like, I know what you made a mistake. You allowed love into your life. I'm not going to do that. And he goes and he throws it off of his balcony on Coruscant, which means the thing probably fell a couple thousand feet, maybe hurt somebody. That's not good. And then he's off. a lot of the action now is kind of the two different teams. But before that happens, the First Order finds the Resistance base, the place where they're holding this new Star Destroyer, and they attack. It's a big attack. You have Poe, Rey, and Chewbacca in the Millennium Falcon. They take off. Finn and Rose are in like a ship that Rose made, and they get out. They get out in light speed. They get their huge Star Destroyer out in light speed, but they blow the planet up before the Millennium Falcon can go out. And they're like, even the script talks about how Princess Leia feels that pain for a second time. And right behind the Millennium Falcon is that Knife Nine, the Knights of Ren ship. And so they have a big space battle where at one time they say there's a mountain turned upside down. Poe shoots the top of the mountain to create like a diversion or to create something to hit the Knife Nine, and they get away. But one of the Knights of Ren, they show on ship, he's like got force powers to read Poe's mind, I think, or something. And they find out what planet they're going to. And so like they're going to find it. Now, here's where we get to Tor Valum. This is equally my favorite and least favorite part of this entire script. So Kylo Ren goes to this planet and it's just decrepit. It describes him walking through just fields of dead skeletons with different kinds of armor on and stuff. And when he goes in, he hears this weird voice. And the way this has been described, the pictures, is that Tor Valum is like Lovecraftian. He's a monster. And he's like, I think they said 7,000, 10,000 years old or something. He becomes Kylo Ren's Yoda. This scene is like Empire, where he's teaching him about the Force. And remember that Palpatine's master Plagueis, he tells Anakin that he learned how to cheat death itself. So you learn Tor Valum, and he tells him to take a life is to cheat death. And so my problem with this, I'll get the Tor Valum stuff out of the way, is all that's cool. All that's great. And they have him training Kylo Ren. They show him like taking the life force out of a creature and killing it. And then he sees a cave like Luke and Empire, and Valum's like, you must go in there. And he goes in and he has a fight with Darth Vader. And you would have had this epic battle of Darth Vader and Kylo Ren, and Vader beats him. And Kylo Ren's mad. He's just mad. He's like, I need more power. And Valum's like, I've given you what I can. So he's like, no, I want more. And he takes the living force out of Tor Valum, killing him. When I said the script could have been longer, could have been more movies, introducing the super powerful Sith Yoda, and then two scenes later killing him, that I didn't like, and I hopefully that would have been fixed. But now we go to our heroes on the Falcon, Chewbacca, Rey, and Poe. They land on this planet, and there's this great sequence where they have to hide out, and so Rey puts on like this, shopkeeper gives her this sari, and she puts it on, and then you see some stormtroopers are walking about, so Rey grabs Poe and kisses him and to distract him, and he's like, oh, that's kind of hot. And then they go see this person who I don't know if it's supposed to be the Zori Bliss of it, but who comes, and she has like these marbles, and Rey uses a force, and this one falls, and they're like, that's where Mortis is. That's where you need to go. So now we're getting into the third act of this movie. Everybody knows where they need to go. Rose Tico, Finn, they're on Coruscant. They're at the Jedi Temple, which is like empty and dusty and stuff. They're getting ready to light this beacon. And then at the same time, you have Poe, Chewbacca, and Rey. They're going to go to their ship to go take off for Mortis. And then the Knights of Ren show up. And there's just this epic battle. Chewbacca takes one. In the script, it describes that he throws him into the air, takes his bowcaster out, and shoots him like he's a clay pigeon. And then Rey like stabs one with her lightsaber and then pulls another one force-wise into the other end of her lightsaber. I mean, just an epic, epic battle. So they dispatch of the Knights of Ren. And she tells Poe, you need to go to Coruscant and help the Resistance. He's like, I am going to help you. I'm not leaving you. And she uses the Jedi mind trick on him. And it's a nice scene because you can see Poe like, don't do this to me. And she quietly keeps doing it. He's like, don't. And finally he leaves, but still kind of has this understanding. So Rey's alone. And Rey takes the Knife Nine and she takes off towards Mortis. The bit with the beacon is kind of interesting because it comes up and then it doesn't work. And then Rose is like, can't anything just work? And then they get it to work. They do the stuff they do. And you see the beacon goes out and it goes to all these planets, and it's a hologram. All the droids and all these plants start to project a hologram of print a hologram of Princess Leia. She's saying, you know, this is General Leia, the resistance. We need to fight for freedom. Oppression is too long. We can never let it stand again. I need your help. And it's going all over the galaxy. And at one time, you even see the bounty hunter Bosk, who looks like he's a crime lord or whatever. The beam is going everywhere. And then you see Kylo Ren after he's killed Tor Valm. He sees the beam, uses his force power and basically stops it, blows the beacon up. And everybody's like, oh, crap. And then TIE fighters come down on the Jedi temple and they're chasing Rose and they're chasing Finn. And they're like, OK, we got to start fighting. And that kid that you saw who witnessed the execution early in the movie, you see him save Finn, or Finn and Rose get separated. They're like, and they both think the other one's dead. A big thing happens. And so Finn is about to be eaten by some sewer monster. This kid, I did forget too, while Rey was fighting the Knights of Ren, she sees the Knights of Ren and Kylo Ren killing her parents. So she sees this thing. And so Finn, he's like, he gets saved by this kid, and the kid brings him to this poor village in Coruscant. Just tons of people. I keep forgetting stuff. Before that, too, Finn runs into a stormtrooper, defeats him, says, take your helmet off. And he's like, do you remember anything? And da da da. And the guy's like, I think I know a little bit. And Finn's like, look, you need to break free of this. You need to be a freedom fighter. You need to help these people. And he's like, so what am I supposed to do? And Finn says, you get a name. That's the first step. And then the stormtrooper says, then what? Finn says, then you find something worth fighting for. And also before Rey leaves Poe, at one time she's like, you know, I'm just a no one. Because like Kylo Ren said, she's no one in The Last Jedi. And Poe says, no one is no one. Which again, I think is a really, really good piece of writing. Now you come to find out that Rose is captured by the First Order and General Hux tries to get into her mind. And she's like, are you trying to use a force? You're an idiot. And he's like, get away from me. I'm going to torture you. And they have like electric pokey thing like an Empire that Han has, and she's really worn out. Some stormtroopers are taking her away when she sees one of them has like a taser type thing, and she grabs it, zaps both of them, and she goes to run off all around the First Order base. So she escaped. You see Leia, she ends up going to visit Lando. Lando does show up and he's like on at some casino, and she's like, Lando, I need your help. I need you to get all the scoundrels, all the bounty hunters, and I need an army. And he's like, everybody's going to die. Nobody can do that. We fought this war and now we have to fight it again. So kind of defeatist. Rey goes to a black hole and drops into it. And like you see her like mind fracturing and remembering all these great moments in her life, comes through the other side of the black hole and crashes on this planet where like the seasons are changing constantly. Looks up and sees a mountain with a temple. She's on Mortis. At the same time, Kylo Ren lands on a different part of Mortis, and you see these like old Jedi statues and everything. Now, this is where the script is a lot like Return of the Jedi. You have Rey and Kylo Ren on Mortis. You have Finn, C-3PO, R2-D2, and all of them are on the ground in Coruscant. There's going to start to be a huge space battle. They're going to bring their huge Star Destroyer and everything in. And a great little bit here is Poe jumps into the Millennium Falcon and he takes off, and Chewbacca's all mad. He doesn't have a ship, and he turns around and he sees an X-Wing, and Chewbacca jumps in the ship and just starts kicking all kinds of ass. Even Poe's like, that's one hell of a pilot right there. So you have that action going on too. And then you have Rose on the First Order ship. I'm going to start with Mortis. Rey, she has visions of her family, of her being left on Jakku and how much that hurt. Kylo Ren has visions of him being a kid. Han Solo is in this movie where he's coming home and he's got his new lightsaber, and Han's like, you need your mother understand you. You have to come home. And he's like, she's afraid of me. And he's like, your mother loves you. He's like, give me the lightsaber. And he's like, you know, I can't. Then it flashes to him killing Han Solo in The Force Awakens. And it's a close up on Han's face that says, even as his life drains away, you can see the love for his son. So Kylo feels that. Finn steals like a walker. There's different types of TIE fighters fighting them. The battle's going on, but like everything, the battle has to go good and then bad. And there's these things called like brute troopers, these really brutal stormtroopers that you see them like just hurting townsfolk. And you see the regular stormtroopers kind of stop like they're, wait a second, this is wrong. So Finn's about to get killed by one of these brute troopers, and suddenly The stormtrooper, he said, go get a name. Shows up with a few other stormtroopers. They all have their helmets off. He saves Finn, picks him up, and he says, my name is Rafe. And Finn's like, I like it. He's got, so they've got these guys helping him out. And the battle continues to rage. And then Rey and Kylo Ren meet at the temple in Mortis. You have your space battle. You have your ground battle. Things seem to be going well right now. Rey and Kylo Ren are fighting. There's a great little sequence with a bad guy BB unit where they need like some codes from his system. R2 tells C-3PO, you have to rip him out of him. And he's like, I can't do that. I'm too nice. And he turns down to the little droid and he says, I apologize for this, and rips his circuits out. And he keeps going beep, beep. And he's like, will you please go quietly? So R2's about to send all this information. They find out Rose is on the First Order ship. They're going to, and she's like, it's a ship. It's a real ship, their base. And she's like, so maybe I can mess with their hyperdrive. Right when R2's about to send her stuff, he gets shot. It even says his circuits fry immediately. There's no noises. There's nothing. He's just gone. And C-3PO is destroyed. Finn's like, look, we need his memory core. I'm sorry. And they're getting beat now. The brute troopers, the First Order, they're beating them back. And they're like, we got to retreat. And C-3PO's like, I'm not leaving R2. And Chewbacca grabs R2 and grabs C-3PO. And they start running away. And like Chewbacca gets shot a couple of times. And it's just bad. Where while on Mortis, Rey like shatters part of Kylo Ren's helmet. You see him, his face with all the metal in it. He blinds her. He slashes his lightsaber across her eyes. It's bleeding. She's just on the ground. And he says, you know, goodbye, scavenger, and goes up to the central temple of Mortis to go find his great power. And then Star Destroyers are just showing up left and right. And Leia and everybody's like, we're about to die. We can't do this. Chewbacca's ship gets burned down. Everything is about to end. Hux and everybody's happy. When all of a sudden, here comes Lando. You see all these cool ships and it's all the scoundrels of the galaxy. And they're like, we're here to help you. And then it cuts to Rey climbing up the stairs of the Jedi temple. And you hear Luke. Oh, before this, Luke is, his Force ghost is talking to Kylo Ren. And he's like, you can offer me nothing. You have nothing. You're weak. Your father was weak. And Luke's like, you choose hate. He's Kylo Ren yells, I choose power, and swings his lightsaber at him. And Luke grabs it. Just holds it. And Kylo Ren says, I will be the strongest Skywalker ever. And Luke says, you are no Skywalker. I love just how antagonistic. Mark Hamill would have been incredible in this part. Well, when he says that, you hear his voice and it's cutting to all these things. And he said, I'm not alone. Obi-Wan is right. We're all connected, all living things. You see Rey going up the steps. You see Princess Leia. And you hear Luke say, the Force surrounds us. You see Rose, and she looks up like she's feeling us. And Luke says, it penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. We are one, bound by the Force. And you see Poe, and you see Luke does this incredible monologue while everything comes together. And Luke's like, we will not be broken. You see Rey takes a piece of the sari she had from earlier, puts it around her eyes, walks in, up powerful, uses a Force to grab her lightsaber. Just basically tells Kylo, we're going to have to fight till we're dead. And they go on. They fight. So now the tides have changed. And you have the First Order is being crushed. They're being crushed in the streets by the people. They're being crushed in the skies by Lando and their crew and everything like that. And Hux is like, bomb the city, do this. And this guy's like, it's over, sir. We're outnumbered. We can't do anything. I thought this was kind of dumb in the script, but it says Hux realized he lost the Star Wars. He walks into his chamber, grabs his vintage lightsaber, pales himself on it. And it's a purple lightsaber, by the way. They make sure to tell us that. Rey is starting to beat down Kylo Ren. He's like, I will take everything from you. And he starts pulling the life force out of her. And you see her withering away and you see him getting healthy and the metal falling off of his face. And then Leia calls out. And she says, come back, come home. You see Kylo's face soften. He reaches his hand towards Rey and he puts all of her life force, including his, back in. And then he collapses. His face is all kind of wrinkled. And he says, Solana, your name, Rey Solana. And then he dies. She falls over like they literally fell to the death. And here's the end of the movie. So you see the sun coming up on Coruscant. Finn with his army, his stormtrooper army, Poe. lands down and he finds a resistance flag and hands it to Finn. And Finn marches up on top of just a barricade of fallen starships, shakes the flag, and everybody's like, you know, yay. And Finn, who was a scared stormtrooper in the first one, is a leader, has brought these stormtroopers with him. They're like, well, where's Rose? Because you see the capital ship start to take off. She escape comes in an escape pod, and Finn finds her, and he's like, did you mess with their light speed computer? And she's like, well, I couldn't really shut it down, but I did change the coordinates a little bit. You know, they might just fly into a star. And you see the huge capital ship hit light speed and then explode as it runs into a planet. Now, I hope there was nothing living on that planet. That'd be sad. And it's like, yay. And then you cut to the Mortis Temple and you see Rey floating up into like a starry field. And there's these three shimmers. It's Yoda, Luke, and Obi-Wan. I don't know why Obi-Wan's there, but Yoda's like, you've taught us something that we did not know. And she's like, how could I teach you? And Luke's like, you chose to embrace the dark side of the light. You chose to find balance. There's a scene earlier in the movie where Rey talks about this and Leia's like, light, dark. She's like, I've lost everything in my life. My life has been just horrible. And I never embraced the dark because I had love. I had those attachments. These are the Jedi saying, Rey, you figured it out. You brought true balance. And Rey shoots force lightning in this movie, by the way, at one time too. I forgot that part. So they say, you can stay here with us. You can have serenity, knowledge, peace. Or you could go back there where the galaxy is in turmoil. You will have pain, suffering. You will lose loved ones, but you'll be living. And Rey decides. You see her like thoughtful thinking. And then we cut to a huge ceremonial hall and you see Princess Leia putting medals on Poe and Finn and Rose and Chewbacca. Even the script's like, Chewbacca finally gets a medal. I hated that part. And then they're on the platform on Coruscant and Leia has the little blue light indicator, the bracelet she was wearing to know where Rey was. And she hands it to Poe and Poe says, I'll never stop looking for her. And then you see Finn walk up to Poe and give him a big hug and then hand him the leather jacket from The Force Awakens. And he says, here, this is for luck. And it cuts to Poe wearing the leather jacket and Chewbacca and the Falcon with the beacon for Rey. And then it's C-3PO and Princess Leia with R2 while R2's being fixed. When they turn R2 back on, he's showing projections of like all these moments in the movie, showing Obi-Wan giving Luke the lightsaber, Luke and or Yoda lifting the X-Wing out. You see Princess Leia and Han at Endor, and Princess Leia gets a tear in her eyes and she's like, thank you, R2. And then you're some planet and you see Finn and Rose, and Finn's telling these kids a story, all these different kids. And they're like, do you believe she's really gone? He's like, no, she'll come back one day. And it seems like Rose and Finn have a good life. And he tells the kids to go out and play. And even the kid from Canto Bright is there and they're using the Force. And it's like, oh, here, Finn and Rose are trying to raise these kids, not like the Jedi did or like stormtroopers did. Then you see off in the distance a figure walking towards them. As the sun or as it gets clear, you see BB-8 just fly off towards there. And the last scene is Daisy Ridley, Rey, not blind, anything like that, with a resolute look in her face, just walking towards this, seemingly to train the next generation of Jedi. That is the Colin Trevorrow, yeah, script. And Derek Connolly, sorry, I don't want to forget about him, of Episode 9, Duel of the Fates. I talked about filmmaker, producer Robert Meyer Burnett. He has the Burnett verse. He has his YouTube shows. And he was one of the first people to leak that the script was out there. And he talked about it. Talked about it longer, twice as long as I'm going to talk about it here. And I kind of agree with what he says. I'm going to give you a piece of what his thoughts are on this script.
This Colin Trevorrow, Derek Connolly script read really well. It was tight. It was character driven. It had interesting mythology around it. I like this character of Tor Valum. I like what happens to Kylo Ren in this script. It's all character based. It's all really, really interesting. And the whole idea of returning to Coruscant and finding out that there are other, we found out in the movie, yes, there are other rogue stormtroopers in Rise of Skywalker. All of those ideas came out of this script. except this script presented them, I thought, in a much tighter, more believable, more interesting, and let's face it, much more Star Wars-esque than what we get in Rise of Skywalker.
Now, there's been a few things, and after Robert Meyer Burnett talked about it, a lot more people, like I said, Jenny Nicholson read it afterwards, who she did not like it as much. She felt like they just, nobody was really hitting the right ideas with this or anything. Andrew Weingartner, who I believe is like an art teacher or something like that, he did a graphic novel of it, which you can go see it online and read through it. We used a lot of the concept art, so if you want to see how it worked, but I think this would have been great. It would have tied the story together. Like the brief stuff with Tor Vallum, the love story between Poe and Rey, some of that, I don't know, but this felt, like Robert Meyer Burnett said, this felt Star Wars. There was some fan service in there. I kept talking about like this scene in Jedi or like this scene in Revenge of the Sith or stuff. There was there, but the movie moved forward. People can say what they want if they like the fact that Rey embraced the dark side and that's what made her all powerful. But they talk in episode one about balance to the Force and what does balance mean. And so this would have kind of closed that off. That would have said the end of it. And I think all the characters, they moved someplace. They went somewhere from where they started. I think Finn and Rose's story in this script is incredible. If I was John Boyega and Carey Marie Tran, I would definitely be pissed off. I mean, but there were some problems, though, too. Just technically, this movie would have very well continued the noise that people were yelling about Star Wars. Carrie Fisher had passed away. You would have had to recast this role, and I don't know if they would have done it. And a lot of people felt like Kathleen Kennedy, Lucasfilm, and Disney itself just didn't want the noise. Okay. Solo had not done well. They had a whole group of movies planned that they just kind of canceled, and they kind of moved more over to Disney Plus and the streaming side of it. And since The Rise of Skywalker, there has not been another Star Wars movie in the theaters. Now, we're getting The Mandalorian and Grogu, but I think that's in 2026. The amount of movies that were just abandoned after this, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff, the Game of Thrones guys, they were supposed to do a movie. That was canceled. A sequel to Rogue One and Solo, canceled. The Obi-Wan movie was canceled and made into the TV series. Kevin Feige was going to do a movie, and then that just got canceled. The Rise of Skywalker kind of showed Disney playing it safe. Maybe it didn't work out, but maybe Duel of the Fates would have also doomed a lot of this. I don't know. I just know I like that script a lot more. I just know I wish we could have gotten that script with these actors, and I know we would have not gotten Carrie Fisher. I think Mark Hamill would have devoured. I mean, Luke is just a jerky dude, but it's great. It's great. This felt like an end. It felt like a story being completed. I know there are people that don't really care for the prequels, and I understand why they don't, but they ended. They ended well. They ended. Second to last shot is Vader on the Star Destroyer with the Emperor watching the construction of the Death Star. And then it's followed with Obi-Wan giving Luke over to Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. And this hope, this, okay, all this sucks, and now we have hope. Jedi, originally, you know, the nub-dub ending or whatever, which, did those Ewoks eat those stormtroopers? It was completed. It was done. Anakin was redeemed. The rebels won. This, yes, it was a retread again, the First Order and the Empire and all that stuff, but it's over. It's not some big bad guy that's going to be the bad guy through all nine movies that's going to do everything, and then Rey's going to defeat him with all the Jedi or whatever. The Duel of Fates script, I think, would have really made that sequel trilogy great. But Kathleen Kennedy has made a lot of people a lot of money in a lot of studios and knows what she's doing. J.J. Abrams has made a lot of people a lot of money and seems to know what he's doing. Colin Trevorrow, the Jurassic World movies aren't my favorite things on the planet, but he's doing okay for himself. Okay, I know he's got another movie coming out that he wrote, and I think he's got a couple in development. Nobody's hurt. Nobody lost a lot because of this, except us fans. I mean, you know what? The Rise of Skywalker did give us this great line reading.
Somehow Palpatine returns.
But the Duel of the Fates could have given us some truly epic action, paid off a lot of things. And I think with a rewrite or two, it could have been up there with some of those legendary Star Wars movies. But I'm here to tell you about what we're not going to see. I do encourage you, though, if you're interested, go to Andrew Weingartner. That's Weingartner. Go to his website to watch, to read his Duel of the Fates graphic novel. I think it's really, really good. Go to the Internet Archive. Just go to archive.org and type in Star Wars Episode 9. The script will come up. And Colin Trevorrow has said, yes, that's a script. That is it. There are a few other ideas that were floating out, a few other scripts. I remember one of my, I don't know if it was from Trevorrow or whatnot, but I remember one of them, the last scene of the movie was going to be, you could tell time has moved on, but you see C-3PO and R2-D2 like sitting somewhere with a group of kids. And C-3PO says, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And it was like going to be, I think that had been a great ending of them telling the stories of these adventures. I thought that would have been cool. But the Duel of the Fates, even if it didn't have that, had some really cool stuff in it. All right. That is the Vaporware Tales, Star Wars Episode 9, Duel of the Fates, something we will definitely never get, never be able to see. Probably, but you never know what happens with things today. We need kind of like a Snyderverse thing on it. I thank you guys for coming on in to just hear me fanboy out about this. I love Star Wars. I love bad Star Wars, except for Rise of Skywalker. I'll continue to always love Star Wars. There's a couple other things. I talked about Star Wars canceled movies that I might do on the Vaporware Tales. Remember, this podcast comes out the 1st and 15th of every month. Please go to publicforumproductions.com to see all of our shows, or just follow, like, give us a 5-star review. That's how people are going to find us, the Vaporware Tales. And if you guys want to, go to Public Forum Productions and tell me some stories of vaporware that you want me to go research and find out what happened to that project. My sources for this were obviously Wikipedia, the Internet Archive, Andrew Weingartner, aweingartner.com, Duel of the Fates, Robert Meyer Burnett, Robservations, Jenny Nicholson on YouTube, CNET. These are some of the sources I used. I thank them. The music for the Vaporware Tales is by CDK, except for Duel of the Fates is obviously by John Williams. This episode was written by me, Artie Kulik, and the engineering work was all done by Artie Kulik and Associates. So again, I hope you guys have a good rest of your time, whatever. Hopefully you have found some good Star Wars with you. I'm personally enjoying The Acolyte, but I know that's going to cause a lot of things, and we'll talk to you next time. This has been a Public Forum Productions. Find all of our shows at publicforumproductions.com.